Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another AfterBuzz After Show of House of Cards, Season 3, Episode 4, Chapter 30. Okay, guys, I am Autumn Chiklis, and you can find me on Twitter at Autumn Chiklis, and my lovely co-hosts.
Hi there, guys. My name is Quinn Skillian. You can find me on Twitter at Quinn Skillian.
Hi, guys. I'm Julian Dujaric. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Julian Dujaric.
And I'm Pegarad. You can find me on Twitter at Pegarad.
All right, guys, and also, please check us out on youtube.com/AfterBuzzTV, and you can take a look at all of the wonderful shows that we host. How many? Like, over 100 hours.
Over 100.
Yeah, we have a lot of TV shows. Pretty much any show that you like, we do. So, and if we don't,
not us four, but, like, somebody.
A lot of wonderful hosts.
So, we've got it covered.
As House of Cards is concerned, all right, so with this episode, we start with Dunbar. In front of all the justices, talking about, obviously, the case against the strikes for Aziz. And, Aziz, right?
Yeah, they were supposed to hit Turi Aziz, but they got Mahmood instead.
Yes, exactly. And her making it public that the president wanted to say he was responsible and that the White House was responsible for these strikes. Mm-hmm. So what do we think about this, that he's come out publicly with this?
Yeah, I think it's great.
It's huge. I mean, they're finally coming out with the truth for the first time. The American people aren't really used to that, I don't think. So.
Nope.
Yeah, I thought I liked that a lot, the fact that they were so transparent in that, because usually there's some spin or something mm-hmm. to kind of make it seem as if it's not as bad as it is, but this was not mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, I think it's also like one of those things where if you do kind of come out and are very transparent and honest about things like this, then the American people don't think you're holding everything back. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Because then you can hold stuff back, because mm-hmm. you have to give them something or else, yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe that's not what's happening here, but
the illusion of transparency.
Yes.
And, Frank has mentioned earlier when he was kind of prepping Dunbar on what to say, he talked about going for the emotional aspect of it and going for, you know, this is what we do, like, this is America and we're trying to do the right and just thing. So if you give the illusion of transparency, then you're right. People don't suspect, or people are less likely to suspect that you're hiding anything because mm-hmm. they think that you're being transparent. Mm-hmm. So Dunbar's really taking control of here. We see her really working the justices.
Yeah, she kicked ass.
There's nothing more to say about that.
I have nothing more to add to that.
Yeah, she was kicking ass. All right, so then we cut to the funeral, and they are reading. The priest is reading the story from the Bible with Abraham and Isaac, and God asking Abraham to sacrifice his only child, and then he says, "Devotion, sacrifice, love. These are the things that we have to stick to." In this nation,
mm-hmm. Can I say something too? Though I don't want to just glaze over it. Though that you notice when the justice is talking to Dunbar in that reading, he loses his train of thought on what she's talking about.
Of course, right. Of course, but that comes after the funeral.
No, that was the first scene where he loses it.
Is it the first one? Or
I think they were intercut a little bit.
Yeah, they were intercut.
Oh, okay.
It
was the first section and then the funeral, and then it comes back and you see him have his flub.
Yeah.
So we are going to get to that because obviously it's very, very important. Huge. For
you guys are too good for me.
we're getting there. Don't worry.
Talk to us more.
We like to hear your voice. It's like the voice of God, because we can't see you from here.
Yes. Well, speaking of God, you have this whole... It was very biblical, this episode, actually. Mm-hmm. They had a biblical theme from beginning to end. So we'll get to the end, obviously, at the end. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely
We want to do it at the beginning.
They bring up this they're talking about God a lot in this episode. And it's interesting because we are a nation that supposedly separates church and state. Mm-hmm. I don't think we actually do. I mean, there's a reason that more often than not, when you look at polls, people say they're less likely to vote for someone who is not religious, specifically not a Christian. People tend to stress God in their... in the election process. So it's...
Well, I think we do a better job than...
We do a better job than many countries, absolutely. I'm not saying that we are we're completely failing, but it's the first time that I can recall that God is brought up in this context. He's talking, and it's become a big theme, because they've mentioned, you know, God bless America and all these things that are pretty obvious, but it's the first time that it's been a really big theme throughout.
I didn't realize how much it was... It was missing, and I'm not a religious person, but within the context of a political drama, an American political drama, I thought it was missing in previous seasons even. We didn't really have that. Even, I know we're only four episodes in, but we didn't have that, definitely not in this season, but in seasons prior at all, or not, at least not to this extent. Yeah. So I was happy to see that.
But I mean, I'm seeing religion in kind of an analogous way. With the way that Frank feels about himself, I'm not seeing it affect politics.
No! It's not affecting politics. Okay. I'm just talking about
how present it is.
It's
in this
present.
Episode.
Like, sure.
It's very deliberate. Like, I think you're speaking directly to the writing of the show. Like,
yes,
the plot
yes.
Yeah. How it's so present.
Yeah, agreed. I was just talking about, like, in terms of, like, church and state and all that stuff. I was like, did I miss something?
No. Not specifically. The reason I bring that up is because it's, like you said, in other episodes, they don't really address it. And though it's not affecting anyone's politics yet, it's the first time that religion really has been brought up. Yeah. And that is something we were talking about, relevance, in one of the previous episodes. Mm-hmm. That is also a relevant question right now in politics. So that was very interesting. So you have the funeral scene and talking about devotion, sacrifice, and love. Mm-hmm. And then we come back to Heather Dunbar and Justice Jacobs kind of losing his train of thought. Not kind of, completely losing his train of thought for a very, very sustained time.
Yeah. It takes like this long pause and you're like, oh.
Yeah, what's going on? No. What's happening? And are you referring to drones? And obviously no one really understands what's going on. Mm-hmm. Except we find out later.
Later. Heather
does herself. Mm-hmm. But this sets the stage for Frank talking to Heather, trying to get her out of what could potentially be the presidential race, saying, I want you to be a justice. Mm-hmm. Dunbar would make an excellent justice. Let's just throw that down on the table.
Oh, he absolutely would. Yeah.
And it's a job that people go their entire political careers hoping to get.
Right. But we know Frank's actual motive for doing this is because he wants to sideline her.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course.
And
absolutely.
It's interesting because he already...
Threat.
Yeah. I mean, and it's kind of... He's kind of... He would be killing two birds with one stone here, because if he gets her there, then he's sidelined her for the candidacy.
Yes.
And then also, so if she is a Supreme Court justice, that helps him, or that helps the Democrats in hopes of keeping the House.
Yeah.
So it's all sorts of good things happening.
Absolutely. So he definitely thinks that he is making a power move right now and that he's completely in power, which we see later. We'll get to that. But then we cut to Claire. We cut to the lovely Claire.
And we need to come up with, like, a prayer for Claire. Every time we come up with Claire, we need, like, a secret Claire handshake or something.
Yeah, I know. She's just... I just think she's wonderful. But Claire.
So she's at the UN meeting for the... what's the official word for this thing? The resolution for peace? Like, what do they actually call it on the show?
The draft resolution?
Yeah. Okay, the draft resolution.
Or are you talking about uniting for peace?
Uniting for peace.
Okay, so she already has, I think it was 93 nations on board, including Israel, she says.
Was this when she's on the phone?
No, this is when they're voting. She gets 13 votes yes, and then Russia,
sure,
of course.
Yeah, that's right. She's at the...
Says no, and then one abstains.
One abstains.
So, clearly, knocked down. The resolution was knocked down. and to go through my notes. So yeah, Uniting for Peace. And then we cut to her basically saying they definitely need to make sure this is when she's on the phone, that Israel is on board.
Okay. And she's speaking French.
It was
yeah.
yeah. That is right.
Which
that
is so funny.
Like, first of all, Robin Wright, I love everything you do except when you speak French.
Oh, goodness.
It was a little nut.
But we welcome you to come on our show and speak French with us if you're watching.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I took like 4 years of French in high school. I can totally help you out with that.
I was more in the Spanish.
Me too.
I took the easy route too. I did Spanish. Like, oh, this is
okay,
I can speak
so
this.
Call me directly. I will help you.
I'll learn French. It's fine.
Yeah.
So, yes, we have 13 in favor. So the draft resolution does not pass.
Mm-hmm.
She makes a call saying Israel has to be on board. We have to make sure that they do not bail out last minute if they want this to go through.
Gosh, what a job to sit there and have to just be playing these games and make sure, okay, if I do this, and Israel has to not back out. Like, there's so much teetering.
Yeah, so Absolutely. Many plates spinning. It's such a stressful just a state of mind to be in, to have to have your mind in all of these different places.
Yes. And at the end of that scene, she says, we've had plenty of time. We're moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
that's when she says, you've had a month.
Yes, you've had a month. We're moving forward.
Which
now.
Alluded to our time jump that we were questioning earlier.
There we go.
Sorry.
Which is the first, no, not the first time, but it's a wonderful moment for Claire taking charge. Because she is so new to this, we have seen her in the past kind of hand it over to someone else or not be 100% sure in her decisions. But here we see her go, no, this is what I want to do. I'm being decisive. This is exactly what we have to do in order to get what we want, which was nice to see her actually take control of her position now. She's starting to get the hang of it.
Because Claire's usually such a people pleaser, isn't she?
Oh, totally.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, because her job up until now has been to get Frank what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And now that she has a position of power. We mentioned this in earlier episodes. It's a very different dynamic when you are the person on the spot. So it's nice to see her kind of take control for the first time. Or maybe not the first time, but it was a moment where I noticed she's finally getting it.
Getting her hands dirty a little bit.
Yeah, she's going, you know what? No, I'm making a decision. We're going forward.
Sure.
So there was that. Then we cut to Heather and Frank. And this is when Frank says, we want...
Oh, because Jackie, after the after the funeral, the Navy SEAL funeral, Jackie kind of alludes that Dunbar might be thinking about running in 2016.
President.
And so that kind of is why he's trying
to sideline
her.
Yeah, so Frank's going, we can't let that happen. Mm-hmm. So what a convenient moment.
Mrs. Dunbar.
Yes, obviously very sad that Jacobs has Alzheimer's, which is devastating. And what he makes a good point later, even though it was a selfish point, it could do terrible things for his reputation, for his legacy, if it were to unfortunately
but
get out.
He's not wrong.
No, he's not wrong.
No,
at all.
He's definitely not wrong.
Yeah,
because everything will get questioned.
Everything comes into question. All of his decisions up until that point. How long has the time frame of which he's had this disease? How long?
Yeah,
has
how
that
many months has it
work?
Been since he told Frank? Do you think?
Enough for it to be problematic.
Yeah, like 7 months or something like that.
Yeah, it was enough. It was enough for it to definitely bring it to light.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with
symptom.
You. Yeah, for sure. And I agree with everyone on the panel. It's definitely something that would come into question. Like, not just maybe, I don't know how long does it, I don't know much about the disease, but however long it takes to develop. But
it's different
his
for
entire
everyone.
Career.
It is.
Though, because I guess it is so different for everyone, so yeah.
Yeah, some people
he does bring up a good point.
Unfortunately, I do know quite a bit about the disease, and it definitely depends on the severity.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't know the severity.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
So, they just hear, he has Alzheimer's, and he's in charge of making some really,
the most
really
important decisions.
Law-altering decisions.
Yeah. Exactly. So if people were to find that out, I mean, I know, just think about it, if it were trending on Twitter tomorrow that the head justice was suffering with a mental condition, first of all, you have to sympathize because it's an awful and devastating disease.
Right.
But then you have to think, oh my God, this person has been in charge of our legal system.
Yeah.
And even though it's just memory, you need to have full control of your faculties in order to be holding such
it's
a high
memory,
position.
It's memory, it's judgment, it's temperament, it's a lot of different things.
It's a lot of, but I mean, Frank obviously didn't care when he first heard about it. I mean, he just wanted to make sure that he was going to have someone on his side there. And so now it's like, oh, actually, I was wrong. You need your rest. This is bad.
Yeah, and he, of course, said, you know what? I talked to my wife, I talked to my kids, and I'm just going to be happier here. So,
and that's when Frank turns to the camera and goes, must I destroy this man?
Yes. I know. But we're not there yet. Because right now...
so good.
Oh, it was great. Right now we're at Heather and Frank. It says, Jacob has Alzheimer's and I want to... we want you to fill in the position. Mm-hmm. And she's obviously taken aback. She's honored. She says, I absolutely will. And he says, okay, I will talk to him. I'll talk to Jacobs about the nomination. So, cut to... I believe
Gavin?
Frank. Oh, no. Gavin was just a little later when he's talking to Rachel. But we're talking... This is...
Frank meets with Mr. Mahmood.
Mahmood, that's right. Yeah.
And he has those phantom pains.
Oh, that was terrible.
Yeah.
How awful.
And Frank was like, that was the first time he had seen probably something so...
tangible
decision that he'd made. Yeah.
And we see later on, and we'll get to when he's talking to Claire, he says, I think... Mahmood got to me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm burying these soldiers that I'm sending out for deployment. So this, I think, really got to him.
It was...
And Mahmood wasn't going to take it.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to accept the apology, and he certainly wasn't going to be polite.
Yeah.
It was a great punctuation on all of the decisions that Frank has done up until this point.
Agreed. It was... Yeah. I'm really happy they actually had this. Because... We often talk about in politics the fact that a lot of the people making the decisions are not directly affected when it comes to war in the same way that the general public is or the people who are serving. And you hear people, especially in military families, talk about it, and you know, there's a stress on how do we support our troops, and yet, unfortunately, they're not supported in the way nearly as much as they should be. So you have this moment... between the two of them where Frank's pretty much trying to appeal to his sense of reason. Mm-hmm. So you don't understand how hard this job is. I make decisions and I try to be just every single day. And he kind of puts his foot down in that way, which, by the way, to a certain extent is understandable. Unfortunately, when you are the leader of the free world, if you will, you have to make some pretty devastating decisions.
I think Frank's used that excuse before, though.
Oh, totally.
Like, I make decisions every day. Obviously, some of them are not going to end well.
Yeah, and to a certain extent, of course, that is true. But then he turns around and says, well, I'm sorry, but I don't forgive you because ultimately, look what you did to me, and it's not just me. Yeah. There are... It's just the difference between... You're right, this is the first time that he's kind of encountered this kind of tangible...
Like, putting a face to the...
And it's his decision now. Mm-hmm. And that's hard. And we see a human side of Frank come out, which is always wonderful to see, where he starts to feel... He feels terrible. It gets to him.
Mm-hmm. Just questions his moral compass.
Absolutely.
That excuse has always been, up until this point, or I feel like, I suspect, in many points in his life, Frank's life, self-promoting, or it's to like, forward himself. It's a self-interesting thing.
Yes.
This is the first time where he's done that as a way to kind of, it's like as a defense, emotional defense mechanism, because it's right in front of him.
Yeah.
The result of his decision is right there, speaking to him about how horrible of a decision.
And he says, I don't forgive
you. And he doesn't forgive him, yeah.
He's got no legs and phantom pains.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so it's the first time that when he's used that decision in a way that's been kind of like a way to kind of take care of his heart.
Yeah.
His emotion.
Absolutely. So now we get to Gavin. We have Gavin and Stamper talking about finding Rachel, and he basically gives him the offer, I will make it possible for you to leave the country if you tell me exactly where she is. I want an address. I don't want a state. I want an address.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This scene is so messed up. There's something so upsetting viscerally to me about the place that Stamper has gotten to now. Like, the fact that he is... I think it extends further than I just want to make sure Rachel is quiet. This is an obsession that is so... primal and so twisted.
It is.
At this point.
It's like an addiction,
and it's also an ego. His ego is so bruised,
and he
just needs to make things right in his own head. He can't let it go.
Yeah, and Gavin, he's been searching. I mean, in episode 3, we didn't talk too much about how he was searching for her, but he needs more to go off of. So he has this idea to go after Lisa, which is the girl that Rachel was dating for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Right, of course.
And so he's, you know, she's kind of Doug's like, I can't go because the girl's going to recognize me. So he's like, okay, I'll go. And he goes to the AA meeting and tries to get close with her.
And interesting that they're not together anymore, because it just kind of shows that Rachel's pretty damaged. Like, she just kind of is going through these people, and she's kind of leaving them in her wake, and, you know, she's in some kind of place.
Yeah, and I also think, because we don't know where she is, I think she's freaking terrified. She's been put in a position now where she feels like she may have potentially killed someone.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't. Mm-hmm. We don't know, because we haven't seen her, but the last time we saw her, she just bludgeoned someone with a brick?
Like a brick.
Like a rock or something. Yeah,
something where she easily could have killed him. So she doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And she's pretty, God knows where she is mentally. I'm sure she didn't go back to Lisa, because if she didn't kill him, she knows that Lisa's probably the first person. So she's probably off, God knows where. I guess maybe we'll find out. Probably, more than likely. Everyone's on, you know, he's trying hard. He's going to find her. But it was, they go to the AA meeting and they don't really find anything. She's very silent about it. Mm-hmm. They get no leads.
Yeah.
Pretty much like, oh, ancient history, I'm sorry, I gotta go.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a really specific... Also, I feel like that if I were in that position, that I would think of it as a very specific thing to inquire about when I've just met you. Maybe that's why she was a little more reserved.
Well,
in that
they
regard,
talked. They started talking about his relationship first, and then he kind of push the ball over in her court a little.
Yeah, but I just feel like... Sorry, go ahead.
No, just wondering, like, do you guys think that Rachel went back to her after she hit Doug, or no?
I don't think so. No. I think she
be too
scared. On the run, yeah.
Yeah. I think the logical thing would be to just go.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. All right, so then we get to Must I Destroy This Man? No. Which is...
I was shamed.
Yeah, Frank and Jacob.
So
and
good.
It's... What a wonderful moment-ish, I guess. It's tainted. But you have this moment, remarkable's more the right word, where he shows mercy in a way that he just doesn't show. He is so ruthless and so ambitious and manipulative. To see him break forth in the way that he does and go, must I destroy this man? No, I'm going to show mercy. Make that very pointed decision. Do it. And then he gets... And then, obviously, what sucks is it wasn't a lesson learned, because the one time he shows mercy, it ends up biting him in the ass later.
Yeah.
But we will get to that. Talks to him. Is there anything really we want to throw in more about that whole conversation where, other than the fact that Jacobs is definitely suspicious of his motives right away?
Yeah, I was going to say, he already pretty much threatened him telling the press about the Alzheimer's, so just because he didn't go further with that, I think that, like, he already wasn't showing mercy anyway.
Yeah.
Like, as in the damage was already done.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, the damage with pretty much everyone is done with Frank, but, it was, the reason it was significant, I think, is because it was just a pointed decision to, in his mind, show some semblance of mercy. Mm-hmm. Whatever he's done in the past, but it was his decision to take the higher road, and what sucks is it bites him in the ass later when Dunbar...
Or it might come back later and...
Save him?
Yeah, save him.
Very potentially.
Yeah.
I mean, that is something that could happen, but as of right now, that happens, and then we have the arrest.
Yeah, Michael Corrigan.
Okay.
So he was outside of the... Remember in the beginning
episode 3, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
There was that protest going on for gay rights outside the White House, but then he goes to Moscow and gets arrested there.
Yes.
So now he's in a jail in Moscow.
Yes, and obviously when you have a United States citizen imprisoned elsewhere, immediately all attention turns to our leaders to get them the F out immediately.
Yeah, right. And they're thinking that Russia's doing this in retaliation for what we're doing to them.
Yes.
You know?
But that's more inside knowledge.
Yeah.
And when you have that kind of inside understanding, or at least inclination, you know, you can't really tell the public that. You can't be, they're doing this
because we did this.
And the public probably won't even believe it.
Believe it or care.
Yeah,
they don't care.
Yeah.
They just want their citizen back, and understandably.
Yeah.
What do we think of that? Again, can we just harp on that a little bit? Like, what do we think of him going to Russia and proclaiming his activism in a country that obviously sees homosexuality as well, it's illegal there, so. Well, it's not illegal. Is it?
There is a law.
It's very, very much a problem there. But what do we think of?
What do we think of him Michael? Going there? Like, what do you think of Michael doing that?
What was the impetus?
I think just to show the world that, you know, support for gay rights.
Yeah, you see this all the time. I mean, regardless of whether or not it's necessarily. The best way to go about it is obviously debatable, depending on who you speak to. But I'm always under the mindset if we're going to get political.
I guess
for
that's
a second,
what I meant. That's what I'm trying to.
Yeah. Well,
that's the direction I'm taking.
Do we think that's the right
move or what?
I think it's very dependent on the situation. Mm-hmm. If we're going to get political for just a hot second, my two cents.
We can't. Not with this show.
There are no politics in the show at all. My two cents would be, and I've talked to a lot of people about this. When it comes to protest. We are very fortunate that we live in a country where peaceful protest is legal, and that freedom of speech is something mm-hmm. that is protected under the Constitution. That being said, I also don't think that protest should be the first thing that people go to. I think it is always... protest comes out of a state of feeling like you were not being heard, mm-hmm. and you need to get your point across in some manner.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to Russia, without getting too deep into it, I understand why people would be in protest over something like gay rights, because they're not being heard in any way. There is no discourse. Mm-hmm. There is no conversation being had about gay rights in the higher-ups that's being vocal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The most vocal people are the people who are going out and protesting. So I definitely understand why... When it's not in the public conversation in the same way that it is in the United States, where everything is kind of...
You kind of go to your only choice left.
Yeah, you go to your mm-hmm. only choice yeah. left, which we live in a country where everything is about... right now, a lot of things are about social issues.
Yeah.
So we have that, I guess, privilege and disadvantage, where there I totally understand why people feel the need... to speak out in that way and put their own selves at risk.
Especially when you know it's going to be broadcasted.
Exactly.
It's going to garner so
it's
much attention.
Yeah.
A lot of attention.
Yeah, I understand. I definitely understand the motive. I mean, if anyone would understand that motive specifically for that cause. But I don't know if that's the best way to go about it. I mean, I don't know that that's going to elicit any change.
Probably not.
So I don't really see... I see it kind of almost as a waste of time, because you'll get the same kind of reaction, or at least media coverage, from you protesting in the United States. Obviously, it sends a bigger message if you're doing it in the country in
yeah.
which those discriminatory policies are happening. But
yeah, I haven't.
I don't know.
Agree
it just wasn't.
You.
I don't think it was very smart.
No, but I think people people want to make a difference, and people want
yeah.
to feel like they're making
Absolutely.
A difference.
Yeah.
So I get it. Do I think it will make much of a difference? Him alone, maybe
no.
not. Mm-hmm. But it's possible that him in union with many other mm-hmm. instances could be continue, because I guess the mentality is, if I don't, then who will? Or
yeah.
You.
Well, I think it's cool that this led to them to Syed asking Frank about gay rights here.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So I mean,
we're getting to.
So
yeah.
if that's any consolation, we have that conversation starting
right.
now. So that's kind of cool.
So yeah, and the whole thing with Moscow wants Claire to remove the resolution. That's what we think this
mm-hmm.
is
yeah.
kind of alluding to.
Yeah, and we see Claire talking to the Russian ambassador. What's his name? I didn't catch his name. Does anybody know?
I didn't.
No, but he was on this episode a lot.
Yeah,
he was.
So she's talking to him, and he says that he doesn't agree with the gay laws in the country, but that he works under Petrov, and that's his ruling or whatever, and he just has to kind of go with it. So we see here that the Russian ambassador, he's not a mean guy. He's not mm-hmm. He has a heart. He believes in these rights, but he's just kind of, his hands are tied.
No, I like him.
Yeah,
yeah, I like him.
I think he's a smart guy, and
yeah.
I think he's going to end up being really, really helpful to Claire.
And I don't yeah. necessarily think it's... Actually, I don't necessarily think it's Petrov's MO either. I think
no.
Petrov is... kind of going with the will of the people, the Russian people there, because
mm-hmm.
I mean, we see it in the news so often that gay people are
mm-hmm.
are persecuted in Russia, and so
yeah.
I don't know that Petrov even really cares about gay people. I think he's just kind of perpetuating the sentiment the masses, of the of what the masses want. So
wait, what the masses
in Russia? I think Russia.
But they just arrested.
I know, but I mean, if think about it, if you're the leader, if you're the Russian leader, and you're for gay rights very publicly, like Russia's not like the United States. They will topple you. They will take you out and. You know, to quite literally take you out, like they will kill you. And so, you know, I don't know. I suspect that it may not be his agenda. I think he's just kind of trying to keep power.
But if he was, I guess my question is, if he was trying to keep power, wouldn't he not arrest people for protesting about?
No, because he knows that that more people. Would
disapprove of that.
Would disapprove of homosexuality.
Yeah.
Then would disapprove of
Okay, we're on the same age. Sorry, I think. All right, yeah. Okay. There we go. No,
I could be completely wrong, and it's...
No, I had flipped around what you were saying in your head, but no, I think you're absolutely right. But then we get to the press conference where...
Nyla.
Yeah, just goes off. Goes off and...
That was a bad move. I don't know what she thought she was doing.
She's like, to follow up. I'm like,
come on. What do you... Girl, you know that's not going
to
work.
Yeah, I mean, I get what where she's coming from.
Powerful at all.
Not at all. It was very, very tasteless, actually.
Yeah. I wasn't sure what the reprimand was going to be, but I knew it was coming.
Yeah, and she gets her credentials lifted.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Seth wasn't messing around.
Mm-mm. Shoot, so where do we think she's going to go from here? Because we know her. We know that she's going to.
I know. Well, she works for the Tribune, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure they have more where that came from.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, she is going to hold a vendetta.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard for her to be objective in her reporting moving forward on anything when it comes to the White House, because she's been scorned. You know?
And she's gonna start really harping on this gay rights thing. I think a lot of frank sexuality is going to start having to come to the forefront as an issue. I don't know.
But you think so?
I don't know.
You think people are clued into that? Hmm. I think we are, because obviously we see it.
Yeah, obviously we're privy to everything.
I don't know if the American public or even the media is
probably not.
Well, at the Sentinel, at his school and everything, like there are people who know about, you know, who have had interactions with him, and I'm sure, you know,
possible.
I don't know. You know, who knows?
I might be
going out on a crazy limb here.
That'd be very
That would be really interesting. I hope that that's a plot branch, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, I hope so.
That would be interesting to see, I think.
Yeah, but she's definitely going to hold a vendetta, and if anything, knowing her, it's just going to make her go after this harder. So now we have someone with a personal kind of revenge set on kind of bringing... Mm-hmm.
And she's pretty tough.
She's very tough. Yeah. And by the way, she does have a point. That even though it was pretty tactless and that she was very rude to the president, she was doing her job, and this was a conference about free speech and how we need to be able to tolerate free speech, and yet she gets her credentials lifted for... She didn't break the law, she didn't do anything, she was rude to the president, sure, but she makes a point where she did it, disrespectful, sure, but it's her right... She has the right to be disrespectful. Do I think that you should be disrespectful to the president? No. But she's not... She brings up a valid argument saying... He was holding a press conference about toleration of free speech, and now I'm getting my credentials taken away from me for exercising that right.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. All right.
And when... So Seth takes away her credentials, he gets the phone call from whoever saying that Heather Dunbar is... on TV, announcing her presidency.
Yeah. I did not expect that. Yeah. I did not expect that. That totally came from out of left field for me. I should have seen it coming, but I did not.
Yeah, because her eyes lit up when she was offered that position, the Chief Justice position. She was like, oh man, you could just see it in her face.
Yeah, I think there was a couple clues earlier in the past couple episodes too. Like, one time she was sitting in the Oval Office, and she was just kind of like looking around and like kind of just like marveling in it a little bit. And so I think that there's been like a couple little like... clues that we're gonna see.
Well, I suspect that once you get a taste of what it could possibly feel like to run the country.
Yeah, didn't Claire say that? Yeah, Claire said that.
Is that where I'm getting? That's not our original thought. Sorry. But I agree with Claire. Once you do,
once you've envisioned yourself there,
it's a slippery slope. Just go for it.
So then you have this conversation. He says, "Get her in here immediately," and they have their conversation, which was very candid with her going, or on her part, saying, "Like, someone needs to rub the stink out of this office."
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh.
Oh,
and she's talking about how the Democrats need to like rid themselves of scandal and all that stuff. It was good.
It's very, very, very heavy language for sure.
For sure, one of my favorite back and forths we've had on the show.
Yeah, and she says that so she actually was really close with the Chief Justice. She goes to his house once a month for dinner, and
she knew the day of his diagnosis.
So that was huge.
Absolutely,
it was a nice surprise.
It was a nice surprise.
Doesn't that set up a whole thing about Heather? That says so much about her, how she is as a politician.
Oh, totally.
Absolutely, that she was able to keep that under wraps, that she...
And that she keeps... That she maintains relationships like that in general.
And it's something, because they're talking about how it's a long shot for her to get the... to be elected. But if she does keep relationships like that, and she has enough people on her camp, we already see that one of Frank's main issues is the fact that he has no relationships because he has stepped on everybody's throat at one or another. So,
and she seems pretty sharp also.
Yeah, networking goes a long way. She's very, very sharp.
It's interesting to see how the characters, how Frank's reacting to everything that's going on.
God?
Yeah.
Well, actually, I have a camera in here so they can see me while I'm talking. Okay. But it's interesting to see this because when Frank was the whip, he was the right-hand man. He was interacting with all the small fish, so he was technically a big fish in the small pond. Mm-hmm. Now when he gets to where the sharks are, he's not as used to handling that because nobody's really going according to his plan anymore.
And I don't think people are so easily persuaded but with their skeletons in the closet anymore either. Like he's not able to hold things or find things to hold over people's heads as easily and as readily.
Well, I think it's more that everyone's ready to use the big guns against him right off the bat, and I think he's still trying to hold a pocket ace on situations, and we see that in this episode when he's like, "Do I destroy this man?" And it's like he's trying to show a respect, but nobody else will show the same respect to him, and he's slowly realizing that. So I actually, this is the last episode I've watched, and I'm going to watch another one probably tomorrow night, and I'm really excited because I feel like every step this season has just been stepping on Frank's toes one by one until he's out of them, and he's just like, going to be set free and go crazy.
Isn't it so awesome to see Frank in rooms with people who are smart, as smart or smarter than him?
Love it.
Yeah, because he needs a challenge.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It would be so boring to watch him just trumping and manipulating Trump, this guy. I mean, that's fun to watch,
but there has to be little pawns.
I love that people are as smart as him and sometimes outsmart him, like in this situation.
Yeah, like Dunbar.
Just absolutely, and by the way, which makes her a very viable candidate, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes some great, and great TV.
Great television, right?
Politics don't work the same way on that level.
Yeah. No. Then we have Stamper.
Oh.
All right, let's talk about this for a second. Stamper saying that he wants to be on Dunbar's team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys think that's him?
Creepy.
Is that in Frank's favor, or is it in his own?
I haven't decided yet.
Haven't decided.
It could be both.
I don't see why he would. I don't see what the motive is for him to be on Dunbar's side. Ultimately, I can't think of anything.
Well, I'm saying because he's trying to get on the ground floor of something big, which you know, initially sounds like this sounds like a really great job, a new kind of to have like a new master or whatever.
Yeah.
But I also think that he's just trying to get insider information.
No, he's trying to prove to Frank that he's ready, and he's trying to make it that. If he goes to Dunbar and starts doing things for her, it's going to force Frank into wanting him back, is what he believes, I think.
Absolutely, especially since he knows more than anyone. I mean, he knows all of Frank's dirty little secrets. Mm-hmm. So for him to be on the side of an opponent, it's going to freak Frank out and want him back immediately, pretty much, because...
This is something he's been very vocal about, even in conversations outside of the White House. You can tell that this is, he wants to be in Frank's camp.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think this is just a play to get back into Frank's good graces.
Do you guys think that Frank is gonna do what Stamper wants him to, or
it would be, he'd get be his hard attention. Pressed. Yeah, he'd It'll be hard pressed not to. I mean, go on your point. Frank will probably react that way, seeing that this person who has been so valuable to him all of these years is playing for the other team. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, and more.
You don't think there's even a chance that Frank would decide that he wasn't worth it?
No.
Well, here's the thing.
He's pretty valuable.
It's less about he's irreplaceable and more, he knows too much.
Yep, he
knows
does.
That, yeah. I mean, he knows that he's a murderer. Yeah. This guy, you can't have him. You can't make him an enemy. Or if not an enemy, you can't have him on someone else's team. Because it's not even about, oh, he's such a valuable asset the way he is. It's about if he says something about the fact that I am a murderer, the fact that I have done all of the horrible things that I have done on every level of the moral spectrum. He would not only, it's incarceration for life.
What I was thinking is they went a separate way of what I was predicting as soon as Frank was talking about he wanted the list of potential candidates. And the way I was thinking is I think where they're going now after she's announced her candidacy. And it's that I think that Frank was originally going to try to stave off the people and kind of put them in places so they couldn't run. But now that she's already running, if we put Stamper right next to her, all in a position that later on, let's say 14 months down the road, when it's too late to find somebody else to run, Stamper can pull the trigger and ruin her.
Yeah.
That's and make very the true. Only yeah. candidate left that's optional, Frank Underwood. And that's what I thought. I originally thought that's Agreed. What they were going to do.
Agreed. I thought that, or my initial thought is, okay, this is for Frank, because we've had no real indication that he would be disloyal to him at this juncture. He still wants to be in his good graces.
Mm-hmm. And just as long as he's not going the other way and getting, like, vindictive and stuff.
Exactly. But I feel like we would have had more signs of that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Like, he would have done it by now. I mean, there's so many big secrets.
Or there would have been more
of a build-up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We'd have to see him get seriously hurt.
Exactly.
And I mean, like, emotionally. Not, like, physically.
We'd have to see that, like... Yeah, we'd have to see, like, revenge in his eyes at a certain point.
I don't get that from him. No, not at this point. Yeah,
so I think you're absolutely right. I think that at the end of the day, if he plays... It's a double agent. It's a classic double agent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, then when you look at what he comes to her with, he's like, I'm the working man. He's the guy who is with the working people who are under them. Mm-hmm. So when he's whipping... He's basically going to be her whip for the campaign.
Yeah.
She's not the one making the connections with all these people for the campaign. She's not the one making the connections or the contacts.
She doesn't even have to. She has her own money, doesn't she?
Exactly. She does? So he's using her money. He's getting the connections for her. But when she goes under the rug, they're going to need a candidate. And he's going to be the one with all the connections for the entire campaign.
Agreed.
And he's going to be the one who can take all those people to Frank Underwood's doorstep.
Yeah, he's going to say, I know who everybody slept with, what they had for lunch. You know. Yeah.
Oh, no, he knows everything. That's why I think they're actually just putting such an emphasis on him this season is because ultimately the person who has the most power in this situation is the person who knows the most because when you and can prove the most as well. And he has so much information, more than anyone. And now he's going to get it from both sides, so we can absolutely use that as a manipulative tool.
Do you guys think his name is Stamper because he does all the legwork?
Tech Stamper. maybe.
Clever.
Nice.
But let's talk about let's wrap this up.
I mean, I don't actually think that. Really I just good. Figured out ask.
Let's wrap this up and talk about the scene in the church with the bishop. I think I said priest earlier. I meant bishop. Frank goes and says he wants to understand what justice is. And I talked about there being kind of this religious not necessarily emphasis, but they bring up religion a little more in this, especially at the end where he goes up to the crucifix and Jesus and spits in his face. Yeah, what does he say? He says, love, that's what you're selling.
Yeah, I don't buy love.
Yeah, just I don't buy it.
Pissing and spitting on all kinds of signs.
Yeah, spits in his face, and then obviously it falls and it shatters.
That was awesome.
Crazy.
Meacham comes running with his gun, to the rescue.
Yeah.
Also, we totally glossed over the fact that the bishop was riding a motorcycle.
Oh, yeah.
We did. Oh, my goodness. Interesting, also he reveals that he gives the same sermon at all of the...
The funerals.
All the funerals for fallen soldiers, which... I was upset.
Did that make you sad?
It's like a blanket thing.
It made me sad, kinda, but also...
Generic.
Yeah, of course, but it made... I mean, does it surprise me? No, of course not, because at a certain point he even says, like, listen, you bury enough soldiers, you just don't want to write enough.
Especially when it's people you don't know personally.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's not particularly sentimental, but, you know, if it works. But then you have him talking about the two rules, which is love God and love each other.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank says you can't love people that you murder. Philosophical open debate really quickly. What do we think about this? In relation, of course, to the show and in relation to Frank himself.
The Old Testament God, the merciless, all, you know, absolute kind of angry God is a God that Frank understands.
Yeah, who uses fear.
Who rules through fear. Yeah. Frank, like, he sees that, he gets it, it makes sense to him. The New Testament, he doesn't quite click. He can't quite come to terms.
Yeah. I just think it's very interesting that they put such a focus on this at the end of the episode. And talking about love God, love each other, he says.
I wonder what what parallel they were trying to draw within that narrative, within the
yeah, that's the what show. That's what I'm asking is what exactly, because it's obviously incredibly deliberate that they bring up this particular moment, and obviously he says, well, love, that's what you're selling, I'm not buying it. And I mean, if you want to take it in a more general sense, symbolically, of course you have the whole idea of, like, the morals and the, you know, what is compassionate versus what Frank is doing. But I think it extends more specifically than that. I mean, I have no race horse in this race. I'm not religious, so I can't put my personal input, like, on...
I think even somebody who was religious probably
would not. Yeah. Specifically, what stands out in your mind?
Just the fact that the two rules that... You know, he asks, what is justice? And the bishop comes back with, you have to just remember to love God and love each other. Even if you're, even like the whole like, love your enemies concept and the people that you are murdering. And why does the bishop think, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, why is it that the bishop is saying that this is so important for you to remember these two things? Love God, I think, is more understandable, which is like, oh, you know, love your creator, love the person who... or not person, deity, entity that created you and that looks over you. But then love each other. Do you think
but not
that,
love thyself?
Frank does enough of that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly why I'm saying that's not what's important. You know
I think that is something that the bishop is trying to emphasize, is that the important thing is to retain your humanity and to not get lost in the his understanding of that kind of ruthless sort of ruling.
Right. And in the end of the day, what's good for most people or for everyone, even if you're not where, you know, you want to be, whatever, what's best for everyone will be a reward in itself, or should be a reward in itself, if you know that you've done the greater good.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if that is the main point, which is don't you lose your humanity. Remember that it is the greatest good for the greatest number. Love your enemy. Love the people who you work for, which is your nation. Then to have Frank walk up to what would, I guess, be the symbol of that in that moment, which is
Jesus.
And literally spit
right in his face. What he's basically doing is spitting in the face of that advice.
In the most literal possible sense.
Which is so Frank.
Yeah. Oh, very Frank. Yeah, I mean, so he pissed on his dad's grave in the first episode of the season. He does not care.
And he gets, like, the handkerchief to wipe it off.
That was very interesting that he would do that, and then obviously it shatters. And I actually had to go back and rewatch that scene because I wasn't sure if I missed, like, wait, did he push it? Yeah. Or was he, did it just fall? And what do you guys think the significance is of it just, I mean, obviously it falling and shattering is exactly what you think it is, but.
Well, because it caused a commotion. Everybody heard.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it's kind of like shining a light on, you know, it brought to light in a loud way, kind of the same, it brought the statue falling being, you know, to cause a commotion, just like the public eye could see into what.
And it's also that shattering of that.
That was not the most eloquent.
It's like 1 a.m. at this point.
I thought the statue was the most telling part. It breaking in this scene was the most telling part of the entire scene. Not the love your people or even anything the bishop said.
Oh, yeah.
I thought the statue was, it represented a few things. There was. When you look at, like, icons and things like that, the falling of an empire is kind of significant based on people pulling down the statues and shattering the statues.
Yep.
And the fact is that power is fragile and a simple touch can shatter everything. And when it shows him spitting in the face of Jesus, it's kind of the people under him can have a lot of control over whether he rises or falls. And that all it would take is a gentle push to get rid of Frank completely.
Mm-hmm. So, you mean like a house of cards?
Yeah. I mean they do a lot of iconic symbolism on that, but even looking at statues of like Stalin or Saddam Hussein and things like that, as the statues fall down, it's signifying bringing down the ruler. And in this case, Frank is the ruler and he's living in a glass house at this point.
Yeah.
No, that's very true.
I like that.
Frankly, I think it's very surprising that he wiped his spit off of the statue. I thought that was
what's the point?
So unfrank of him. Like,
it's not like it was red wine.
Yeah, like what would be the point? Like, if you're gonna spit, this is gonna sound so bad.
It.
If you're gonna own the spitting of Jesus, if you're gonna do that, if you're Frank, it was out of character for him, in my opinion.
Yeah. And then he picks up the ear on his way out. He's like, at least I've got his ear now.
It felt less like a button.
It felt a little cheesy to me, honestly.
They've definitely just in this season in general, I think more than in the last two seasons, have been very heavy on the symbolism.
Very
heavy-handed, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I like the fact that they're kind of owning what it is. Mm-hmm. But they're definitely kind of throwing these kinds of symbols at us a lot more in this season than they have in previous seasons. So I'm very excited to see what else they have.
It works very well with the political dynamics on that level.
Absolutely.
And it's also that when Frank is, in season 1 and 2, Frank is coming up and you don't see direct correlations between his actions and what they cause. The only times is when he kills Peter Russo, and that's him, and that kept him awake. He even says, "I had the nightmares. I see him in my dreams and things like that. I see the kids in my dreams." Mm-hmm. This is, as president, he's dealing with face value for every action that he takes, and it's making him second guess and take half measures. And that's the same with spitting on Christ. Is he spits on it, but then he decides to wipe it off, which is what causes it to shatter, is that he's taking a half measure, and that's bringing his power down.
Yep, and he talks about decisiveness a lot and talks about the fact that he has to be decisive, which a leader does have to be. So when you see someone, he can't afford to be insecure right now, especially with the game that he is playing and what he has done and what he has set himself up for. If he does not go confidently in the direction that he has been set out to do, it will shatter.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's a wrap.
That was such an enlightened, impassioned conversation. Yeah. I'm exhausted by that.
It's really late.
Yeah, it's super late.
All right, guys. You can absolutely catch us on iTunes. Please go to iTunes and rate us. Comment. We'd love to hear your comments and see what you guys want to discuss further. I am Autumn Chiklis. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Autumn Chiklis. Quinn?
I am Quinn Skillian. You can find me on Twitter at Quinn Skillian, at Instagram at Quinstagram, and you can find me on Vine at The Quinn Bee.
Love that. I'm Julian Dujaric, and you can find me all across the board on social media everywhere at Julian Dujaric.
And I'm Pegarad. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Pegarad. Also, on Tuesdays, I host the Following After Show as well as Forever. And on Mondays, I also do Better Call Saul, so catch me on there.
Right. All right. Thank you guys so much. See you guys next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.